Welcome to the Association 100 podcast. The A100 podcast is an extension of our Association 100 bi-monthly newsletter that focuses on best practices, top trends, helpful ideas, and smart strategies and tactics that work in the world of associations. The podcast will feature meaningful conversations with association professionals across the country, taking a deeper dive into trending topics, offering insights that both inform and inspire.
Welcome back to the A100 podcast. I'm your host, Colin Gallagher, and I'm very excited to have a repeat guest with us today. Earl Franks is the executive director at the National Association of Elementary School Principals. We had him on our A100 video series last year and learned so many great things about what the association is doing that we wanted to bring him back. Earl is a veteran association executive and an advocate for public education and school leadership with over three decades of pre-K through 12 education experience. In his role as NAESP's executive director, he advances the association's mission to lead in the advocacy and support for elementary and middle-level principals and other education leaders in their commitment for all children. He represents the nation's pre-K through 8 principals on the board of directors of the Learning First Alliance, the National Policy Board for Educational Administration, and as a member of multiple national educational organizations and coalitions. Earl, thanks so much for joining us on the A100 today.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
It's so nice to have you back. We talked last summer during the craziness of ASAE's annual convention. So I would love to hear, what have you all been up to since then? Any new initiatives or developments you want to share?
Right now, we're preparing for our annual conference, which will be a little different this year because it's a joint conference with our colleagues at the National Association of Secondary School Principals. So we branded it as United, and it will be July 15th through the 17th at the Music City Center in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're looking forward to that and focusing on our conference learning strands of building leadership capacity, instructional leadership, school climate, culture, and inclusivity, leveraging student voice and agency, and something I know we're going to talk about today more, and that's whole school wellness, which focuses on the adult students' mental health and well-being.
I love that joint effort. Is this the first time you're doing that?
It's actually the second time. We did it back in 2017 in Philadelphia. It took a few years off, and so our plan is hopefully for the next two or three years, certainly, to have it as a joint pre-K through grade 12 conference for all school leaders.
That's great. We're recording this in April, but it's going to air in May, which, as we all know, is Mental Health Awareness Month. And you just talked about school wellness. So I would love to hear about the current state of mental health crisis in schools. It's something pretty well publicized that we hear a lot about, but how is this impacting both students and staff?
We know certainly during the COVID pandemic and since that point, students and school staff are struggling. I know just in some recent survey results, I saw 85% of principals and 73% of teachers reported experiencing job-related stress. And by comparison, only 35% of adults working outside of the education field reported experiencing job-related stress. So we know it's a big problem. And oftentimes, students' mental health challenges manifest themselves as behavioral issues. And we've seen that really come to the forefront, especially again since the COVID pandemic. But those behavioral issues put further stress on educators who, again, are already stretched too thin. So mental health certainly is a concern. And we're trying to support our people, school leaders, because we know that they're uniquely positioned to help staff and the students inform strategies to address those issues and ask for significant increased federal support to promote that well-being of educators and students. So we know that school leaders are concerned about their faculty, staff, and students, but as an association that supports school leaders, we're concerned about their social emotional wellness as well. So we've really been focusing on that the last several years.
That must be so important for them to have someone looking out for that, because I imagine they do spend so much of their time worrying and caring for others that you drain that well and you don't have the time to think about yourself. And then you see those numbers and wow, that is a huge percentage of people dealing with an awful lot of stress.
Absolutely. And we've been trying to push out supports that will help them. We can talk more about that in a few minutes, but again, trying to give them safe spaces so they can talk to one another to know they're not alone. Being a principal, a school leader, is a very lonely. It's a kind of an isolated job. Oftentimes, you don't have an assistant principal if you're an elementary school principal. And it's a lonely feeling. You feel like you're on an island. So the association world gives them that connection with colleagues, not only in their school district and their state, but also at the national level. So you can talk to a leader you're on the East Coast, you talk to a leader on the West Coast, and you say, hey, they're having the same problems and issues I'm having. So that's another great thing that association provide, those opportunities to connect, to talk. And so you don't have to worry about someone really passing judgment, maybe like you have in a local school district. You can actually ask people, is this legal? Is this illegal? And they won't pass judgment on you. So we have been trying to focus on providing those safe spaces, those networks for them to connect with one another.
That connection and community, it's so important. And that's really what associations are all about. So I'd love to dive a little deeper into that. Are there other strategies or resources that you're providing to help your members address and manage the challenges within their school and then the challenges they face themselves?
Yeah, well, back at the beginning, like in 2022, we offered a leadership cohort that had six opportunities for school leaders to, again, connect with one another. And it focused on self-compassion, looked at the brain and SEL, problem solving for educators, understanding the brain to get to the heart of SEL, cultivating healthy relationships in the workplace, and then leadership and forgiveness. We know that's a big part of that. So those were some session topics that we had over a period of almost a year where they could come, get together, and these were recorded. They could go back and revisit those. So that was one way that we work to help connect school leaders to have conversation around how they can support themselves and support each other with SEL support.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And I love that they're recorded too, so that people can go back and re-experience it, or if they missed it, that's really helpful to have that kind of resource. Shifting gears a little, I want to talk about the role of policy and advocacy, which plays a huge piece in all of this, especially with addressing the mental health needs in schools. Can you talk a bit more about that and talk about any of the work NAESP is doing and what you have achieved or any challenges you're facing right now on that front?
Absolutely. At NAESP, we've recommended policies and legislation to support health, safety, and well-being of students and staff, and that focused on expanding access to healthcare professionals and services, increasing the number and hiring of school counselors and other student support personnel, promoting strategies that enhance emotional well-being and resiliency. And those are some of the areas that we've tried to focus on in terms of policy in the legislative area.
When you talk about bringing value to members, advocacy is really invaluable for association members because it's something they can't do on their own typically. And to have someone fighting on your behalf on that front really makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And just to follow up on that, I know at our recent advocacy conference with our colleagues at the Secondary School Principals Association, we've talked about making mental health a priority. And I talked about the main areas we were focusing on because we know that mental health needs are always top of mind for school leaders because they need resources and support to make sure every student is cared for. But Secretary Cardona, the United States Education Secretary, when he spoke at the conference, he talked about mental health and that continuum that starts with having a good tier one program where children feel accepted and having caring adults around them. And then that involves ensuring students have access to good co-curricular activities like arts and music. But we also talked about, he noted that the department's focus on ending the stigma attached to seeking out mental health support, because we know a lot of times people don't want to, you know, they're a little embarrassed to say, I need mental health supports. And what we agree with him, and we're working to make sure that stigma's not attached, but also making sure that the federal budget includes adequate funding for resources of support in schools and communities and creating technical guidance on mental health. And that's something that the United States Department of Education started doing back in 2021. But as I've talked about, we've really been focused as an association on trying to bring those policies and advocacy efforts to the forefront.
That's huge, fighting that stigma. I feel like there's actually been a lot of progress made, because I think you see Gen Z kids now who so openly will talk about seeing their therapist and taking care of their mental health. And hopefully Gen Alpha will just take that even another step further and help get beyond that stigma and allow people to get the help they need.
In recent months, social emotional learning has really become a political football. It's been really politicized. And it's unfortunate, because we know that social emotional learning helps students build skills, habits, and mindsets that provide a critical foundation for success, not only in school, but in life. And when SEL is effectively integrated into classroom practice, and it's not necessarily you take a course in SEL, but the idea is to embed SEL in the classroom practice, students can then understand how to manage their emotions and goals, empathize with others, establish positive relationships, and make responsible decisions. And so I go back to when I was a student in school many years ago, I was involved in music. And that helped me as I became older, went to college, and then now even in my 60s, it's really helped me understand how to manage my emotion, empathize with others. We know that's critically important for a school, positive school climate and culture that nurtures the emotional, mental, social, physical safety of every student in the school community is so very important.
Yeah, that's so well said. Talk to me about how you all are integrating mental health awareness into any ongoing professional development and training programs you have for elementary school principals.
I've talked about the cohort that we had that started back in 2022. And so that's something that we've worked really hard at. Also, we have articles in all of our publications, whether it's in our communicator, whether it's in our principal magazine, that talks about best practices, how to build social emotional skills at home. And we send that out so that they can send that to their parents. We call it report to parents. It's in English and Spanish, so they can share it easily, put out on social media. But one just in August of 2023 focused again on how to build social emotional skills at home. And these were some of the parents. And so we talked about how educators help students learn all sorts of new things, and talked about developing healthy identities, how parents can help manage emotions and achieve personal and collective goals, how they can feel and show empathy for others, how to establish and maintain supportive relationships, and to how to make responsible and caring decisions, because this is not in isolation school. It's not just about school. It's about working the school, working with the home, working with the parents, working with the relatives, all the school community, so that we can help students improve. And the whole social emotional piece talks about the things that I just mentioned. And it's going to help them in school, and it's going to help them later in life. If you talk about how to feel and show empathy for others, I think any responsible adult wants all students and all children to have that capacity to how can they establish and maintain supportive relationships. And then again, I'm being repetitive here, but how to make responsible and caring decisions. So that's part of how these social emotional learning skills can help students. So that was a way, sending that report to parents. And then we also talked about self-regulation strategies that we share with school leaders, how these were best practices from other school leaders that they talked about how, like in a middle school, how they have methods that they can help their students. So tapping out, which teaches kids about mindfulness, using tapping techniques to activate their certain nerves, these creative zones, how they can work to validate their emotions, rethinking conflict, because we know that's a big deal. And then mindful strategies, how staff members can be trained to help in this, changing relationships with colleagues and students. And then how teachers are using and imparting these strategies with students. So again, this is how we work to bring these best practices back to school leaders so they can help one another.
I love the holistic approach too, and even getting things out to the parents. It just makes me laugh. I'm not quite at that level yet. We have a three-year-old, but we're listening to all this Daniel Tiger stuff right now about having empathy and trying to learn it now. So that's so funny and interesting to me.
Yeah, and I go back to, it's disappointing that we politicized social emotional learning. You can say it's life skills, or what you call it, you want to call it. But having empathy for others, I think, again, any parent, adult would want students, children to have the capacity to do that.
Yeah, 100% agree. There's no need for that to be politicized. So hopefully we can move past that and not be stuck there for too much longer here. Are you able to share a success story, maybe, or an example of where a school principal has really effectively integrated some mental health resources and seen some positive outcomes from it?
Yes. Just in our most recent principal magazine, we had a middle school principal from Michigan that shared this SEL curriculum for grades 6 through 8 that I found pretty fascinating. But they focused on the what, and I'm quoting here, that we didn't get very far with the how. And they took and created the set of practices and came up with a 9-week rotation for classes at the middle school, again, level, rotating classes. And they didn't use a specific program, but they incorporated 4 elements representing the acronym SAFE. So they focused on sequence, active, focused, and explicit. And just giving an idea of 6th grade rotation, they focused on hug your brain, collaborative games, music exploration, and STEM investigations. 7th grade, they had healthy living, outdoor activity, social media, and CAD 3D modeling. And then the 8th grade, they did theater performance, mock trial, applied digital skills, and woodshop. And for 7th grade, on the focused conversations around social media with social awareness, and they talked about perspective taking, identity development, the power of perception, ethical decision making. And what they saw after going through all of that, they surveyed and got student feedback. And of their students, 98.5% of the students said they felt like their school was a safe and secure place. And then the second question was, do you feel that you have a trusted adult you can go talk to when you're upset? A little over 92% said, yes, they do. And the final part for me that was included in this article, what words describe how you have felt the most so far this school year? And 82% was the highest percentage that they were happy, followed by 50% motivated. The lowest percent was 3.7 depressed. So that shows me that in this particular school, in Michigan Middle School, again, they use this program. This is something that they created. It's not a program that they purchased. And I think that's important. You do what works best for your school, for your community. And it may not look the same state to state, school to school. But again, working on these concepts and thinking of different ways that you can teach everything that I've talked about that's involved in SEL. So I would say that is something that would be positive outcome.
That's incredible. What just very cool way of approaching it. But then those statistics, that's fantastic. They have to be feeling really good about their program.
I think so. And again, this was an article that submitted to Principal Magazine. We published, so every member of ours has access to this as a best practice to see what's worked in this school, especially at the middle level, which is a whole different dynamic than the elementary K-6 or K-5. But I just think it's fascinating. I never would have thought that woodshop
right.
could include that in terms of students exercising self-discipline, self-management to complete projects in a 9-week time frame. So I just think it's great.
That's awesome. And what a great resource for everyone reading that magazine too. So we talked about resources. I'd love to hear what advice you would give for other association leaders, because there's a lot of other associations where their profession or their industry is facing this mental health crisis right now. So when they're trying to support their members, what's your advice for them?
Avoid making SEL a political issue. No, call it something else. If SEL is the wrong term, call it mindfulness, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But focus on developing healthy identities, managing emotions, achieving personal collective goals, help folks show how they can feel empathy for others, establishing and maintaining supportive relationships. That's what we do in the association world. And then make responsible and caring decisions. All of these components of a healthy SEL program or anything else you want to call it. So that would be my advice to my colleague.
I love that. That's so great. And that's a smart thing too, to avoid the politicization by just renaming it if you have to. It sounds simple, but it's true. Sometimes that's the way to get around things and make them work for you.
Yeah, it's not our role to teach people how to feel.
That right.
Our goal, our hope is to help people understand their feelings. Again, how, if we can help them manage their emotions, give them some best practices in achieving goals, whether it's personal or their association goals, I think that's all part of this larger conversation about social, emotional, and then help people. How do you help them take care of themselves? And that's something that was what we try to help school leaders with. You're not alone in this. You got to take care of yourself, because we know that you can't take care of others unless you're healthy.
Oh, 100%. Looking ahead, because somehow we're already almost halfway through 2024 here, but what are some of the key priorities for NAESP in continuing to support school leaders, whether it's in that mental health realm or otherwise?
Thanks for asking. We certainly are focused on social emotional learning, like we talked about, because we know that mental health's a big issue for us. We also know that artificial intelligence is a whole nother thing for educator. And there are many things coming down the pipeline, ChatGPT, and we know lawmakers, researchers are all involved in this guidance to school districts and schools. How can we help them incorporate artificial intelligence in education, because we know it's not going away. Social media safety is another concern we have for certainly our earliest learners. We know on Capitol Hill, that's been a big issue. Chronic absenteeism is something we're focused on. We know that coming out of the COVID pandemic, some of our attendance numbers aren't what they need to be. We're also focused on principal shortages. Also, this expiring AARP funding, which we know schools and districts have until September 30th, 2024, to spend those funds. And so we've been working with our colleagues on that. And certainly private school vouchers is something those of us that are pro-public education are focused on. And education on the campaign trail, we know we've got a presidential campaign ongoing, an election coming up. Although we don't endorse candidates, we just talk about what are the candidates saying about education, because we believe education is one of the bedrocks of our society. And then certainly assessment, measurements of success. We know that students are more than just a single test score. So we're also focused on that. And then we certainly are involved in a lot of coalitions and collaboration, whether we support certainly bills on the Hill that talk about mental health of educators. We talk about mental health supports and certain bills on education on Capitol Hill. And again, supporting our school leaders, because we know that they certainly need assistance. So those are some of the things that we're working on.
Yes, you guys are busy. Wow, that's quite a to-do list, but I wish you guys luck and keep up the good work. Very important for all of us. Before I let you go, though, to tackle that to-do list, we like to wrap up every podcast with a just for fun kind of lightning round. I think we've gotten to know you a bit through this episode with your passion for your work, but we'd like to get to know the personal side a little bit too for our listeners here. So our first question is very easy. Where did you grow up?
Tipton, Georgia. It's in the southern part of the state.
Great. What is your go-to Starbucks order?
Boring, regular coffee.
You're funny. Just regular. All right. If you won the lottery tomorrow, would you still work?
Probably. I would just figure out ways to give the money away to worthwhile organizations.
That's the answer we seem to get the most. Most people don't want to leave their jobs, so they like doing what they're doing, but want to find a way to do it less, maybe?
Yeah.
All right. What's the last show that you binge-watched?
It's going to be a plug for Prime Video, but the Jack Reacher series on Prime Video, which is like Reacher. And then part of that, too, on Prime Video was Goliath, featuring Billy Bob Thornton as an attorney.
Oh, I like him.
Yeah, so those were, yes, they're not very educational, but yes.
Sometimes you need a break. I like it. What's a food you can't live without?
I'm pretty boring when it comes to food. I'm not difficult to please. I love a Black Forest turkey sandwich, a wheat bread. I like all kinds of food, from seafood to beef to pork to chicken. So there's not one food that I could identify there.
All right. Sounds good. Finally, what is your bucket list travel destination?
I don't have a bucket list. I have places that I like to go. I like all-inclusive resorts and warm climates. I just got back from a transatlantic cruise. It's a long way across the Atlantic Ocean. So 7 or 8 days all is water. So
wow.
I like warmer destinations. Warmer climate.
I'm always a fan of the warmth too. I grew up in Syracuse, New York, so I had enough cold to last me a lifetime. But yeah, I always joke when people ask me this question. I'm like, everywhere. I just like going places. I don't have a specific place in mind, but I want to go everywhere.
I agree with
you. Earl, thank you so much. These were some really great insights, and it was so great to hear all the amazing things your association is working on. So we really appreciate you joining us on the A100 again today.
Thank you for the opportunity to visit.
And that's a wrap on today's episode. Thanks for listening to the Association 100 podcast, brought to you by the A100 publishing team, powered by Onward and Upward Marketing and Communications. You can subscribe to the Association 100 podcast on Spotify so you'll never miss out, or listen via our website at theassociation100.com. Follow us for all the latest insights and trends impacting the world of associations. Thanks for tuning in.